May it please the Court, my name is Chris Troupas. I'm the attorney for Starlene Howe and the appellant in this case. I think I thoroughly discussed most of the matters that are an issue and before the case in the briefing. I would like to address two matters that have developed since, just two cases that in reviewing and looking to see whether or not there had been any case that had changed the status of the law on the issue of the standard of review. I noted that 2 weeks ago the district court in the Northern District of California decided Flores versus Prudential. Although I know that's not precedential authority for this court, the court did cite the Kearney and the Ingram cases at length.
Well, counsel, if under Kearney or standard, whatever we call it, if this just ain't an award of discretion.
That's correct.
If it just isn't. So that de novo review is required. I'll ask you a question I asked counsel before on the other case. If we say, yep, that's right, the standard review is de novo, isn't that the end of our review? We just send it back to the district court and say, do it under a de novo standard?
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. That is exactly what happens. And that was most recently stated in the Jebbian.
Most of the details about
relevancy
to support decision, all that stuff.
I think it's
even for us at this point, it would just be for the district court, and that's the end of it. Is that right?
I believe so. And I think, Your Honor, in the Jebbian versus Hewlett-Packard case, which was decided a month after the appeal in this case was filed, the court reiterated that, citing the Mangaluso decision. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, we did not brief the Jebbian case, and that was because, in my review, I didn't discover it, although it was it is 349 F3rd. 1098, and was decided in November 2003. And in that case, the court said on that while under the abuse of discretion standard, they talked about the Mangaluso case and said that the appropriate thing was to send it back to the district court to take additional evidence when circumstances clearly establish that additional evidence is necessary to conduct
the whether the district court takes additional evidence under Mangaluso or not, it seems to me, is, again, a question. Why wouldn't that be a question for the district court in the first instance?
That is. That,
or
that
looks at it and says, you know, I know I'm not supposed to take it normally, even on de novo review. Should I take it?
That is the case. That's why, Your Honor, in the posture of this case, there was a motion to strike my expert affidavit, and that motion was granted by the judge solely on the basis that the standard of review was abuse of discretion.
Well, he might strike it again on a different standard.
He may still do that, Your Honor. And I made reference to the accident reconstruction report of the state police, which the insurance company never obtained, and he may not want to see that either.
The question is, why do we want to, if you're right about issue one, I understand you might not be and you want
right.
to cover your bases. Colleagues may not agree that you're right on issue one. But if you're right on issue one, then
the entire argument
we go there, do we?
It's absolutely correct, and I totally agree with that. And in an abundance of caution, I guess I'm simply further discussing it. This case was decided below on the term of responsibility. And I believe the plan language was that they had the responsibility for full and final determination of eligibility for benefits. Our point is that there's ample case authority that says use of the term final is not sufficient to confer discretion. The Sandy case clearly says that unless it's unambiguously conferred, the standard of review is de novo. And my argument would be that
rest exclusively.
Yes, it says exclusive, Your Honor, but exclusive is.
So talking about it without sort of taking into account the words that are worse for you, it doesn't really advance your case. I mean, it says responsibility, full and final determination, and so rest exclusively without that.
Correct.
How do you get around rest exclusively?
Well, exclusively simply is no more than an allocation of responsibility. In other words, it says that the employer, for instance, is not making the decision. A third party isn't making a decision. ALTA is making the decision exclusively.
But the court isn't making the decision.
It's not saying that at all.
Why isn't it saying that at all? Well, it's exclusively.
But it says...
Why do you want to say it's exclusive of these people, not exclusive of other people?
The Ingram case clearly says that the use of the terms, for instance, full and final...
Let's say you start dating exclusively, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Let's say you're dating, right? You're dating somebody exclusively.
Yes.
That means, you know, it's exclusive except for the guys next door?
No, Your Honor, that...
It's not. Exclusively means exclusively.
It's exclusively so long as it's within the administrative process. But it doesn't say what standard is to be applied within the administrative process.
Where does it say that?
Well, it's...
Obviously, even exclusively within the administrative process is not exclusive because you do a review for abuse of discretion. So, obviously, you can't make it truly exclusive. You can't exclude the court altogether.
No, you can't, Your Honor. But the point is that the term exclusive does not imply discretion. Exclusive merely says that...
Full and final determination.
Right. And it's only final until the court reviews it under Ingram and under Johnson versus Buckley. And so final doesn't really mean final. It means final for the administrative process. And exclusive means exclusive for the administrative process. Exclusive doesn't mean exclusive and we get to apply whatever standard we please. Exclusive simply means the court's not going to be involved until we're finished.
What do you do with Atwood?
With what, Your Honor?
Atwood.
With Atwood, the Atwood case said that the plan would be the sole and exclusive judge. And I posit to you, Your Honor, that if you look at the definition of the term judge, that it is different.
Talk about judge, you know, Atwood doesn't talk about the word judge. That's something you made up.
It is?
What do you think? We imagined that the administrator was sitting there putting on a robe? What Atwood focused on was the use of the word exclusive. Where do they focus on judge? Show me.
Oh, on page 1321 of Atwood, Your Honor, it says, it refers to the policy. Subsection 2.2 states that an employee who is terminated for cause shall not be eligible for severance benefits and defines cause. Subsection 2.2 states that Newmont shall be the sole and exclusive judge as to whether or not a termination is qualified for benefits under the terms of the plan.
Was judge on the line there? You emphasized it.
A sole and exclusive judge. Exclusive modifies judge.
Was a big underline? Was it bold?
Well, no, it's a quote. Sole and exclusive judge. Neither term is underlined. But exclusive modifies.
Because when you read it, you said sole and exclusive judge. Like, you know, emphasis there, right? That was your...
That was my interpretation of it.
What is it in the case, other than the fact that they quote the language, that suggests that the use of the word judge there had any significance at all, as opposed to what obviously they're talking about? The most obvious thing is this word sole and exclusive.
Because the word exclusive is a modifier to the word judge, sole and exclusive judge. And it simply identifies another the major problem, which is that the language responsibility to determine eligibility creates ambiguity.
You're telling me that if you use sole exclusive standing alone, as in rest exclusively, that's more restrictive than if you say sole exclusive judge, because judges are all powerful?
I don't get it. I don't think.
Isn't the key word, isn't what made what Atwood turned on, the fact that he used the word exclusive. And it's exclusive means it knocks out other people. It means exclusive. It means it's like dating. You know, you're just going steady. Nobody else. That's what exclusive means.
But I
was nothing in the case that turned on the use of the word judge.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Tell me. Show me.
Well, I respectfully disagree.
Tell me where they talk about judge. Other than quoting it, where they say, oh, well, here they said judge. Judge, of course, we know, gives you lots of exclusivity and power and authority and dignity. And all. Do they say any of that stuff?
I couldn't point you to a case that uses the word judge in another
case. That case, Atwood, you relied on Atwood. I said, what do you do about Atwood? And you said, oh, Atwood is distinguishable because they use the word judge. But is there anything in Atwood that focuses in the least on the word judge, other than the fact that they quoted this part of the whole phrase?
My point, Your Honor, is I don't...
Is there anything?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No. My point is...
How do you get around Atwood?
Because we have a difference of opinion as to whether the term judge is the same as using the term authority, discretion, or power, as the Sandy Court referred to.
So, in other words, if...
And if Your Honor's point...
If I should look at it and say the word judge there made no difference at all, the key is the word exclusive, then you lose, right?
No. No.
No?
Because I don't think...
I just want to make sure that I have all the arguments. I understand you disagree with that, but if
I
should decide the word judge there has no meaning to add, that the key word is exclusive...
I do not think that Atwood creates discretion in a policy that simply says we have exclusive responsibility to determine eligibility for benefits, and I don't know.
Why not exclusive responsibility?
I don't think that
denotes
discretion.
But why not?
Because under either case, exclusive is no different than the use of the word final. And the word final, as in the court said in Ingram,
What do you do about Atwood? Atwood said exclusive. Again, since I don't buy the word judge as making any difference, doesn't Atwood tell us that exclusive does, in fact, rest authority?
If we go back to Atwood, Atwood was clearly reviewed. Here's a case cited, 46 Federal Reporter 3rd. Clearly, there was a district court that reviewed the decision in Atwood. Now, they reviewed it even though the administrator said he had exclusive authority. They reviewed it. Now, admittedly, the court reviewed it using or abusive discretion review. But they reviewed it.
Well, nobody argues that there's absolutely zero review.
But my point.
The dispute all along has been, does the district court review de novo, or does the district court review for abuse of discretion?
And my point is that the language in the policy must unambiguously tell the court which standard of review applies. And we have a difference of opinion as to whether the word exclusive should be added to the catalog of words that the Sandy Court listed, authority, power, and discretion.
I thought Atwood resolved that.
Well, the Sandy Court didn't refer to the word exclusive as being, in the Atwood case, as conferring discretion. The Sandy Court simply said, unless you use the words authority, power, or discretion in sum and substance, you do not have it. And the Sandy Court also said that discretion must be unambiguously conferred. And I would posit to you that use of the word exclusive creates nothing more than ambiguity, the same ambiguity that responsibility confers.
What's ambiguous about exclusive? I don't understand.
What's so hard to
understand? We make the decision. No one else does. It's exclusive.
Because every insurance company, every fiduciary makes their decisions exclusively under policies reviewed de novo and policies reviewed with abuse of discretion. Every one of them makes those decisions exclusively.
Okay,
no one else participates.
Give me a case where we have found de novo review even though the authority was given to the administrator was exclusive.
I haven't. I couldn't cite the court to
well,
one
you said
of this
every. Report. You know, you just stood there and you said every policy does this. Give me a case where we said they used the word exclusive and yet we reviewed de novo.
That may be a matter of first impression.
Okay.
I hadn't researched it because I didn't.
But you're making an argument. Every policy.
My argument is not as to what the case is reviewed. My argument is that there are insurance company policies that explicitly grant discretion. And in those policies, it is only the administrator, who reviews to determine eligibility for benefits.
Well, no.
They're being exclusive.
I don't think you're following me. If every policy has that, then it seems to me some of the cases where we've said de novo review must have had it too, because they are within the universe of all. Why don't you show me a case where, in fact, that was the case. They cited this policy language. It is within the universe of all and therefore uses the word exclusive. And we nevertheless found...
I didn't see that word as being the dispositive word. I did not research that word. If there are cases out there, what I'm telling the court is I haven't noticed them. I'm not saying there aren't cases.
Is Ingram the case?
Ingram may be the case. Ingram said full and final authority.
I'm saying there's not a case. You're saying that particular question you can't answer accurately, so you're
right.
Trying to mislead it.
Well, that's exactly. I don't want to guess at it. I'm trying to do the best that I can. But I think Ingram and Sandy both say there has to be an unambiguous conference of discretion. I don't think the word exclusive does it.
And they reject the word exclusive?
In Ingram, the word is all. The policy says the carrier will make all decisions on claims.
Well, all seems to me to be the same as exclusive.
Certainly not.
Make all decisions.
Certainly not.
No?
You can make all decisions, but not have exclusive authority.
Well, now you're using exclusive to modify
authority. That are really quite different concepts.
No.
You may have broad authority, but not exclusive authority.
If you make all decisions, then you are exclusively deciding them. If you have all authority, you were saying all authority is exclusive authority. They're the same thing. You used one as a noun and the other as an adjective. So I respectfully disagree with your point, Your Honor. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. The standard here is set by the Supreme Court's decision in Firestone. And in Firestone, they looked at the court there set down two components to confer discretion. The authority to determine eligibility for benefits or to construe the terms of the plan. The plan here explicitly gives Anthem the responsibility for the full and final determination of eligibility and interpretation of terms.
Who else would do it? I mean, somebody's going to, especially with insured plans, of course, somebody's going to have to make the final decision for the plan. That's easy.
The
Supreme Court couldn't have meant that. Or else every plan would, ipso facto, have been discretionary review. So they couldn't possibly have meant that. I mean, somebody's got to make a decision.
But
where did that take us?
Well, I think what the Supreme Court chose language, full and final determinations of eligibility or interpretation of terms. And in subsequent cases, I think that language has taken on special meaning. In cases that this court decided relatively early after Firestone, the Jones case, the court looked at the plan there and looked at the terms power to construe provisions of the trust and decided that discretion was conferred.
Well, you know, in Snow, we said the same kind of thing, but one wouldn't really want to rely on Snow.
After Kearney, I think not, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I don't think Snow did say. What Snow looked at was a proof of loss provision, sufficient proof of loss. Snow, Kearney was a proof of loss case. Newcomb was a proof of loss case. Sandy was a proof of loss case. And after Kearney, it's clear that those proof of loss cases, that language will not confer discretion.
What about Ingram? It seems to me Ingram may be your hardest problem. And it's unfair in the sense that Ingram comes out after the events in this case, after your plan is written. But Ingram, frankly, takes a lecturing tone toward insurance carriers or whoever's writing the policies and comes very close to saying, if you don't use the word discretion, then you can't
claim discretionary authority. It doesn't quite say that, but that's certainly the way it's trying to point. Now, exactly how the panel in Ingram got to that point, I'm not entirely sure, but it does seem to say, look, it's not enough to say that you've got the responsibility to make the decisions. You have to speak directly to the issue of whether you have discretionary authority.
You can read it that way. I mean, I think Ingram, the question is whether, based on Ingram, this circuit is now going to go to the point to where if the plan does not use power, authority, or discretion, the plan doesn't have it. And there is a couple of ways I think Ingram can be distinguished. First, there's nothing in the Ingram language, which is in the plan, and it's at 244 F3rd 1112, that talks about the authority, the responsibility, the power to construe or interpret term plans. So it doesn't say that. And it is an allocation. They talk about an allocation of decision-making authority. You can look at our plan here, and in Section 12 of our plan, we talk about the processing of claims, how to file a claim. And then it's the last section of the plan at issue here, which is headed ERISA information, and it's under the heading how to decide an appeal. And we use very succinct, straightforward language that perhaps not the most artfully drafted, but given the fact that this plan went into effect in 1997 and the case law at that time, whoever drafted it was clearly attempting to trigger the standard set forth in Firestone, because they say specifically in one sentence, the responsibility for full and final determinations of eligibility for a claim, semicolon, interpretation of terms, semicolon, determinations of claims, semicolon, and claims are denied in whole or in part rest exclusively with Anthem. And that was clearly an effort by the drafter of this plan to trigger the Firestone standard. The language in Ingram, it's more sort of wishy-washy language. You've got to look in different places to try to come to the discretion. The Ingram panel cited the Fifth Circuit's decision in Cathy, a 1990 case. And what Cathy did, there were three different sections that the plan administrator was relying on to sort of divine out the discretionary authority. I think that
let's say you don't win this argument on discretionary authority. I mean, just to get you past that, I think we know what the arguments are on that. Let's say what follows?
Remand. I could make an argument. I think that the affidavit is insufficient.
Are you now going to tell me the argument you're not going to make? You either make the argument or you don't make it.
I won't make it.
Tell me the argument you would make.
I won't make it then, Your Honor.
So your view is if we disagree on your standard of view, we remand to the district court?
Yes, sir.
And then it has discretion whether or not to admit or not admit.
Yes, sir. It's clear that what Judge Williams did is he kept that affidavit out based on the standard of review. And so we don't know what he would do under the de novo standard, and I think this court would send it back, and I'm not going to argue to the contrary.
Anything else you need to add?
Well, I think Sandy is a good case. And three times in Sandy, they talked about the panel, the Sandy panel talked about authority to determine eligibility.
It can't help you that much if the other side is also arguing the same case.
Well,
if it was
I'm sure you've had people up here in front of you before, Your Honor, arguing the same case. But not
usually both arguing the slam dunk for them.
Well, he's wrong. Usually I mean, Sandy.
It could go either way, but I've seldom had it. Both sides say, well, you're. Sandy is it, and boy, it's a home run for us. Okay, why don't you tell me how it's a home run for you?
Well, three times.
Walk me through it.
Three times. At 12:00 time.
In the crowd.
Well,
show me.
I'm not going to draw any wider conclusions than that.
Show me where.
At the bottom of at 12:05. The court says, here, unlike other plan provisions we have held conferred discretion, there is no language conferring authority on reliance to determine eligibility, to construe the terms of the plan, or to make full and final binding decisions. Our plan does those things. Go on to the next page. They cite, the court cites a bunch of cases that I think support us, and they come down in the middle of page 1206. In the absence of some such language, Kearney does not permit discretion, et cetera, and then it goes full and fair, although the full and fair review language does not connote discretionary authority, yet does not unambiguously grant reliance power to determine eligibility, power to construe the terms of the plan, or the power to make decisions that are final and binding. Our plan does that. We use the word responsibility. Is this case going to stand or fall on the use of the word responsibility? I hope not. And then again, right before the long footnote, they say, for sure, there's no magic to the words discretion or authority, but we're not at Hogwarts. Therefore, it should be clear, unless plan documents unambiguously say in sum or substance that the plan administrator or fiduciary has authority, power, or discretion to determine eligibility or to construe the terms of the plan, the standard is de novo. Now, our plan does not say use the words authority, power, or discretion, but I don't think that's the inquiry. I think the inquiry is, does it unambiguously retain the power to make eligibility determination and construe terms of the plan. And I'll let Mr. McPhee respond now. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Neil McPhee, and I represent the employer and plan sponsor, Strategic Distribution.
And why do they care?
Well, the court may have noted early on in the original pleadings that there may be an issue as whether who has.
I read pleadings all the time.
Pardon me?
You mean like a complaint?
Our answer, we also have a cross-claim. There may be an issue as to.
I forgot. It was so long ago I read the complaint and the answer in this case. Remind me.
There may be an issue as to the responsibility for any amounts of medical benefits to be paid between the Anthem Alta and whether we retain certain liability, Your Honor.
So why do you have a dog in this race about how the contract is construed?
Well, we concur with Alta Anthems. That's our dog in the race, is that we're riding the same dog, Your Honor.
I don't quite understand. Let's say that we disagree with you and, in fact, I don't quite understand how your position is going to be affected.
Your Honor, the original contract between Alta, Anthem, and Strategic Distribution allocates certain liability for any medical benefits, health benefits that are paid out. We obviously accept or concur with Mr. Squire.
I see. So whatever they pay out, the employer might be the insurer pays out, the employer might be liable for part of it.
There is an issue there, yes, Your Honor.
Or there's an argument that they might be liable for part of it. So if they're not paying out anything, then you're off the hook.
That's correct.
I understand. That makes perfect sense.
And if the court has no further argument.
It's basically a self-funded plan, at least in part?
Well, in part.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I reserved a few minutes. If the court has questions for me, I'll answer them. Otherwise, I'll submit. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Case decided. We'll stand some minutes. Next argument in Jarrett.